the Brad Sesmatt Show, broadcasting live.
Up we go into 2025. Thanks for being with us. We will have Jody Jackson, Jody's Gems, around the Cardinal season now that it's over. Brought to you by E.D. Marshall Jewelers. Jody Jackson will be with us. And then the great John Wilner. John has been working on a column. He was pinging me the last 4 days since what happened down in Atlanta. And he wants answers as to targeting and what is not targeting and how it impacted Arizona State. We will talk college football with John Wilner, as always. Opening comments are brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. As always, and through the years, it's Desert Financial Credit Union. We do appreciate their support. I'm a little under it today. Just voice is a little scratchy, but we fine. It's a little much in the last week. A lot of time in Atlanta. Came back, went to the Arizona State basketball game on Saturday, and all people wanted to talk about was the football game, of course. So let's just start there. I think the fallout since the game has happened wasn't a successful season. Anybody who says otherwise just wasn't watching. Is it disappointing that Arizona State lost in the manner that they did? Yes, it is. Is it a season to remember? Yes, it is. Is Cam Scadaboo the greatest running back to come out of Arizona State? If you were to ask people this in 2024, they would say yes. If you were to ask people in 1975, they may say it was Gerald Riggs. I don't know. All of that to say, is it sustainable? Is something I've been writing about and talking about for the last, 8 weeks? People are in this mindset that this is a way to just continue every year, that they've gotten over the hump. And I would say, no, they haven't. Show me what spring football looks like. I'm repeating some stuff that I brought up, but for the new audience, what does spring football look like? It's not 2,500 people and saying, oh, this is great. It's not. What if they did? So somebody suggested this to me the other day. What if they did spring football like what the WM Open does when they have their concert on the green? Meaning, so on 16, they do their concert and they bring in a big act. Last year was Maroon 5. And the place gets buzzed, place gets hyped, place gets ready to go. What if on Friday night, they did something like that within the stadium? Or what if they did something like that in the stadium after the spring game on a Friday night, rather than trying to tie it all together with Pat's run? Different ways to look at things. And Graham Rossini has not been on the ground long enough to implement his own style, structure, everything, other than, yeah, the athletic department does feel much tighter. There's still this frustration within the athletic department on things like Desert Financial Arena and lack of track stadium and what's going to happen when everything gets decided in Congress and so on and so on, and what cuts are coming, so on, so on, so on, so on. Is this sustainable? If next year they fall back to 8-7 wins, is a not successful season? Is this a program that could become a blue blood? All these are very fair, very, very fair to ask. I actually like talking with fans that have this perspective rather than just people that jumped in here in the last minute and they just expect that this is how it's always going to be. No, sports is hard. Sports is really hard. It's hard to be sustainable. It's hard to keep it going. And so the excitement and interest, it's great. You know, I'll just stay on the college stuff here. ASU plays at Kansas on Wednesday in basketball. U of A had a huge win on Saturday at Cincinnati. I watched some of that. They played well. Looks like they finally found their stride. A couple different players that came off the bench or were bench players, and they were able to get in there and play. I think there's a chance that we could have four schools within our state that go to this year's March Madness. It's now 2 months away. This ASU-Kansas game is one of those that is, I think it's more important for Arizona State than it is Kansas at this point. I don't think ASU is in. I saw where Joe Lenardi just posted his bubble teams. First two out were U of A and ASU. So I would like to think that the two would rally. I know GCU is going to be there. That would be a tremendous flop if they didn't make it. And Northern Arizona's hanging in there too. So The CFP itself, the two games this week, I love seeing Penn State Notre Dame, and I love seeing Texas Ohio State. Ohio State is the heavily favored team, even though their coach came this close. Fans want him fired because he can't beat Michigan. And I don't think Texas is all that. And Notre Dame lost to Northern Illinois, and they're going to meet Penn State. Penn State's kind of a yawner. It's kind of like their uniforms. If you went to Penn State, you don't like that shot, but it's a fact. It's just kind of, it's Penn State. Well, we'll see. I'm looking forward to both games. I watched the Super Cardinals yesterday. Kyler threw four touchdown passes. Did I mention Nick Bosa didn't play in the second half? Did I mention Christian McCaffrey didn't play and Brock Purdy didn't play? And let me think. Debo Samuel didn't play. George Kittle wasn't out there. But it's a win. And it was kind of like a preseason game yesterday. Beats the alternative. You don't want to sit there. And if you're Kyler, maybe you did get a little bit of confidence. Kyler Murray in the first half, I was listening to the game. Dave Pasch and Ron Wolfley were pointing out accurately in the first half that Kyler wasn't good. In the second half, Kyler was very good. Very, very good. So they have the 16th pick in the draft. They have a lot of space coming up. They could spend some money. Drew Petzing, for those who don't like his play calling and like him in the role of OC, guess what? Today, the Chicago Bears asked and received permission to talk to him as their new head coach. So that happened earlier today. The Titans have the number one overall pick, and you either have Cam Ward or Shedeur Sanders, or you trade back. And I would say if you're Tennessee, you trade back. You need help. Definitely need help. Trade back to two or three. If you need the quarterback, trade back to two. You can find something. The Suns. Boy, the Suns are bad. Man. I sat here Saturday night and got back about, or lost about, I don't know, an hour and 20 minutes of my life. I will never get back. I watched their second half against Indiana. For those of you that watch, I'm just not into what's going on the court with teams in the NBA until around March. It's just bad. And the basketball has been atrocious this year. It's just, when you're jacking up threes all over the place, and it's just, God, it's just dreadful. But I'm watching them and they looked old. They look tired. They can shake up the starting lineup like they're reportedly going to do tonight and put Bradley Beal over on the bench. Bradley Beal has a contract that's pretty untradeable. Remember when Bradley Beal came here and it was, oh man, they're the greatest. Oh man. And I'm like, we'll see. Is Kevin Durant going to sit here in the next month if things don't get straightened out and do what Kevin Durant does, which is, I don't think I want to be here. I don't think I want to be in a space. I'm very interested to see that. I'm very interested just to see Devin Booker and how he goes about what is happening here. You can beat Philadelphia tonight. They're not very good. They're one of the biggest underachievers right there with the Suns. Suns have to be one or two. This could be the battle of the underachievers tonight. Not good basketball by either team. But gosh, they just Saturday night, they could not play defense to save their lives. And it was bad. It was just, whoa. So, hope to start to see something that's resembling playoff basketball, but not right now. And I still go back to the when Durant and Booker played in the Olympics last summer, you knew that they were, I knew that they were going to take off. Got a groin, got a heel, got a this, got a that, got a this, got a that, load management, got this, got that. And that's what's happened. I'm not wrong on this. When you don't shut it down as a pro athlete, you can be asked to do all these things. Somebody's got to pay the price, and the somebody is the Phoenix Suns. They just are. And the thing is, they're only 33 games into this season. So you can look at it one of two ways. They're 33 games into this season, and they've been awful with a capital A, and they're not going to figure it out. Or we're just kind of doing our thing and wake me up when it's March, which I tend to always lean on just in watching sports. There's a reason if you watch the NFL, the games in late December, when it's teams fighting for something. Like last night, Minnesota-Detroit, how great was that? Flip side of it is you have games that are just awful when teams are done, or teams are just trying to rest players, and games in the early part of the season, the NFL aren't great. But this time of year, it's great. It's great. It's a great product. It's why it is the most watched. All right, Jodi Jackson next on the Cardinals. Her season is done. Her view, what is the biggest area of need to address, and much more. That is next. I'm Brad Sussmat. Edie Marshall Jewelers brings you Jodi Jackson's gems. As always, all things around the Cardinals or whatever else we feel like talking about for crying out loud, because there's a lot going on. Jodi just finished up a Cardinals season. She has the Diamondbacks here in a few weeks. We'll get into that shortly. It is good to see you, my friend. You've made it through a Cardinals season. What is your biggest takeaway from Sunday, first and foremost?
Yeah, they did what they wanted and needed to do to finish strong. This Cardinals team, we saw Kyler Murray throw four touchdown passes, matching a career high. They hadn't scored 47 points in, I think, 9 years, right? It's 2015 season. So they did some damage to the Niners. They beat them twice this season. They won six games at home, which is also quite a feat. But it leaves you with a little bit of a taste in your mouth, like, where was all of this? They also had three takeaways. They had some really good plays on defense, and we saw a lot of that during the season in spurts, but certainly not in one game. And maybe the Rams game was a good example of, yes, they did score 41 and they did dominate. But, again, in a game that doesn't mean anything, Brad, it's hard to take a lot away. For example, when Nick Bosa was playing in the first half, Kyler felt some pressure. Kyler didn't look real comfortable in that first quarter. And then when Nick Bosa departed the game, we know he's been battling injuries all season, most notably a hip injury. And so to see him not really play in the second half was not surprising, but it made life that much easier for the Cardinals. Now, I'm not diminishing the whole thing. I'm not throwing out, I think people that listen to us, knowing that we are media, we have to have these absolutes. And that's just not really how I live, because it's not real. It's not, they still had to execute the plays, but I think it was easier considering the conditions of the game. The other thing about the game, though, is I thought it was a really entertaining game. I think the fact that Josh Dobbs was really trying to, he was trying to win the game. I think he was trying to show off his talents for maybe a job next year. When the quarterback is doing that in particular, it just ratchets everything up. It gets your teammate, it gets the team all on that same page. Juwan Jennings getting to that scrum, in the end zone was kind of, wacky the way that he was playing, considering he only needed 25 yards to get to 1,000 yards, which I think was important to Juwan Jennings, but he didn't seem to care. So the physical nature of that, of those altercations with Star Thomas and Sean Murphy Bunting, kind of ramped everything up. And that was what made it really entertaining for me.
I was watching the game and I thought of you when Greg Dortch not only caught one, but two, because you mentioned about a month ago, where's Greg Dortch? And I agree with everything that you just said about, you don't want to take away the 49ers didn't have, I don't know, five, eight, 10 of their playmakers. So what? So the game finishes up. It had a feel to me of an August preseason game. It leaves a good taste in fans' mouths. Great. I think Greg Dortch may have given something like, where was this all season long? Because that's an area that I look at them moving forward. Got to get better at wide receiver. Is it just Marvin Harrison getting bigger, stronger, tougher? I don't know. Got to get bigger, better on the offensive line, especially guard, in my opinion. But I think Dortch, let's just get into that for a second.
No, it's really, those were some plays drawn up for Greg Dortch, and they were really good plays. Wide receiver screens, one was over the middle, one was more in the flat, and they were good, really good plays. Because when Greg Dortch, one thing we do know, and I'm sure the Cardinals coaches know this, even going back to 20 to 22, when you get the ball in the hands of Greg Dortch, he makes things happen. I remember Dave McGinnis, he used to say juju. He's got some juju, he's got the ability to grab that ball and run with it. And, I I would like to see more of that. Do they need another dynamic wide receiver in the room? I think it would be great. I think a guy that can really stretch the field would be wonderful. And that doesn't mean that Marvin Harrison Jr. is, it's not a slight to him. It's just adding another guy, you know. But even, you know, Zay Jones, we saw him more incorporated in this game plan. I don't know, with Michael Wilson out. And, you know, Michael Wilson is a good player. I don't want to say, like, okay, subtract Michael Wilson and you'll get more production. I'm quite sure if Michael Wilson were in this game, he would have made some plays as well. But Michael Wilson was out with a hamstring injury that had just popped up late in the week. So it did change that dynamic. But to me, yeah, Greg Dortch should not be down as, you know, these plays to Greg Dortch should not be down low on that call sheet, you know. And I know it depends on what's going on in the game. I'm quite sure if, and you know, Drew Petsing will probably speak this week. I'm not sure how that goes. They usually speak every week, but with no game, maybe he won't. You know, everything was a little loosened up without a guy like Bosa, without some of the other guys in that game. But I liked it. I'd like to see more of it, and we will see what happens with that group because I do believe Marvin Harrison Jr. will be a lot better next year. This was really kind of a, even though he has 8 touchdowns with which matches Bolden and Fitzgerald, guys that of course are revered here in Arizona for terrific careers and you know, really Hall of Fame type careers. I think Anquan is in that too, to be honest with you, but we know Fitz is. But you know, there was a lot. That's where numbers don't always tell the story. If you see the 8 touchdowns, but what did the season look like? He's got to get better with those 50-50 balls. There was one again on Sunday. He did not get it. And that's something that I think will get a lot better.
Jody Jackson, Jody's Gems, brought to you by Edie Marshall Jewelers. She joins us every week for a couple of minutes during the Cardinals season. Things going on as well around the valley that Jody can weigh in on. Now that the season is complete, put the 49er game behind, what is the number one priority in your opinion? Because they're going to have money to spend in free agency. They have the 16th pick overall in the draft. Number one area of need to address here in the offseason.
For me, number one is the pass rush. Pass rush, I think the D line will be bolstered by the return of Justin Jones and Bilal Nichols, who both signed multi-year contracts, but were done, you know, early on in the season, really before it even got going. And so for me, it's pass rush. And, you know, imagine what Nick Rawls can do with a guy who can. Who is going to be, you can write it down, right? Double digit sacks, maybe. And I know they feel good about Ojulari. He didn't get to play this year either, but they really need to add an impact guy there. You know, this is
Darius, Jody, what about Darius Robinson? Because, you know, there's your first round pick who was injured all season long, didn't really do much of anything. Internally over there, do they feel like they hit on him even though he didn't have a great rookie year?
I think they do feel like they hit on him. The problem is when you have a calf injury and you are just coming back and trying to get out on the field, you know, the one thing that stood out to me was a quote this past week from Derek LeBlanc, who is the defensive line coach. You know, he gets coached up by the linebackers coach, Rich Rodriguez. He gets, or Rob Rodriguez, I should say. He gets coached up by Derek LeBlanc, D line. And they said, you know, Derek mentioned just going up against 320 pounders, not easy. Getting strong, you know, he said he's tall, but he doesn't have the strength right now to deal with that. He's getting better. He's got to get better with that. So I think that getting over this injury, getting back to being able to really build on that strength, because his frame, I mean, you look at him and he looks like a beast and he looks like a guy that's really a physical specimen and can be a force out there with his strength. But I think that that's one area that he'll make a big jump as well. But I think you still add there. I think you still have to add there and make it really tough for quarterbacks. You can't let quarterbacks just do what they want back there. And look, like I said, Rawls, he schemed up pressure and was very impressive in that area. What they were able to do was great, but it just wasn't enough. And even, you know, you saw that yesterday. Again, you could take yesterday for what you could take Sunday for what you want. But Josh Dobbs was able to do a lot of things. He did turn the ball over, but he was able to throw the ball down the field.
What about the situation with Kyler? Okay, so from this standpoint, we talk about it every week. Kyler didn't look good in the first half against San Francisco over the weekend, but to your point, he finished strong, had a big day. Would the organization look at him and say, does he need somebody to push him in terms of competition? Clayton Toon was drafted in the fifth round. He did get in the game on Sunday, but is Clayton Toon really going to push Kyler Murray? Are we at a point now, Jody, where there's going to be some veteran quarterbacks out there? And is it the organization's duty to say, we just need to push him a little bit more?
I think it's not only about pushing him, but just about insurance. If he gets injured, you know, this year, if that would have happened, you know, what would they have done? They could always go out and get someone. But I think it's a pretty good idea. I really do. You know, you look at the Vikings over there stacking quarterbacks. They want to have options. Everybody wants to have options, right? So, you know, for Kyler, I think there's a lot that Kyler Murray does well. But does he do it in those moments, in those important games when he needs to get over the hump and win those games? That has been the struggle. But I think he's at a point. The good news with Kyler is I think he's pushing himself. You know, he's at that point now in his career where I'm not sure that he needs another body in there to push him, but I also don't think it's a bad idea because Clayton Toon, we just still don't know a lot about Clayton Toon.
Right.
And I think that's a big question for Monty Austin, for Jonathan Gannon is, you know, where really is Clayton Toon in his progression? Is he a guy you can rely on if you're, cause next year, I think we all agree. We all have said this, like it's year three. You have to get into the playoffs, find a way to make that happen. That means getting to 10 or 11 wins.
Right.
Even though 8 this year was great, you need to get up into double digit wins to make that happen. And if Kyler Murray happens to go down, you know, do you trust Clayton Toon? If the answer is no, then I think you need to go get another guy.
Yeah, I think what you just said is very fair. Jonathan Gannon's got to look at it and say the average lifespan of an NFL coach is 3 to 4 years. Okay, it's year 3. They take a step back next year. He's coaching for his job for sure. And if you don't have the right person behind Kyler, or even I'll go down this path, even if the coaching staff and organization internally looks at it and says, you know what, we've gone about as far as we can go with Kyler Murray. We have to go a different direction. I wouldn't be surprised. And quite frankly, I wouldn't be disappointed. I just don't see where they're going to get to where Detroit is or Philadelphia is or others. Maybe because the schedule's pretty favorable next year. If you look at the schedule right now, I'm one of those guys that does that. It's not that difficult. A lot of coaches being fired, rookie quarterbacks, they're gonna have a pretty good situation. It's just, will the NFC West bounce back?
Well, I mean, that's the hard thing that needs to be asked, right? Because if you're saying something that does make sense, Brad, and you're saying, well, look at the schedule, what can they do? I don't think anybody wants to be thinking that about their quarterback is like, how can we sort of survive this? It has to be more like, how are we going to go in and beat Seattle? How are we going to go up and beat the Niners there if they're healthy? How are we going to, you know, it can't be, you know, how are we going to patch this together so we might come away with a 2-point win? And that's the question that needs to be asked is, Kyler, what do you need to do to be better? How do we fix this? How do we get the decision-making better, the game-ending situations, the two-minute drives? You know, how do we clean that all up for once and for all? How do you, you know, make those plays? And, you know, those are the internal conversations that are going to be interesting because I think that now that the season is over, you can have those and you can have those hard conversations, you know, and not to say that they're going to damage relationships, but you can just have those really honest conversations and then have the whole offseason to put it together.
Jody Jackson, dropping knowledge throughout the season. Jody's Gems brought to you by E.D. Marshall Jewelers. We appreciate them and as always appreciate you. Thanks.
Thanks, Brad.
And now it's John Wilner, all things on a national, local space following the college football playoff, the college football team, I say local Arizona State, because John is here to explain targeting. John is here to explain to the fan base what the heck happened. And from your view, you're at the Rose Bowl. What did you make out of Arizona State? And let's just start with targeting, not targeting, because that is the topic of conversation around Sun Devil Nation, John.
Boy, big topic, and understandably so. It was a huge play. So I can explain targeting, but I cannot explain the call that was made because there's no logical explanation for it, right? The big thing that confuses fans is the difference in the rule between a defenseless player and a ball carrier. And in the ASU case, Stovall was defenseless. A ball carrier That is the crown of the helmet rule. But what happened in the Peach Bowl, he was a defenseless player, forcible contact to the head or neck. Clearly it happened. I spent 4 days trying to get an explanation. We're going to have something published on the site here this morning for your readers to digest. May make them more frustrated, but it was such a huge call. And it wasn't the only bad call. Those were Big Ten refs, to be clear, Big Ten refs, Big Ten replay officials in the stadium, and the Big Ten Command Center was ultimately in charge of any controversial call. They blew it. A good crew had a terrible day. They blew it. There was a block in the back on Texas's punt return that wasn't called. Frankly, ASU got lucky. Scataboo was helped over the goal line by an offensive lineman. That kind of assist is illegal. A lineman's not allowed to hoist the ball carrier over the guy. So there were bad calls both sides, but the targeting was the worst. It was at the critical time. ASU would have probably needed a first down to get in field goal range. I was watching the game thinking, oh my gosh, are ASU's field goal kickers going to, after all the heat they've taken, are they going to win this game for them? But anyhow, terrible call. Bottom line, ASU got hosed.
That does not make the fan base feel any better, John.
I know it doesn't. I know it doesn't. I can tell you, though, in the conspiracy theories, oh, ESPN wanted Texas to win because they want Texas versus Notre Dame, Georgia. That stuff, I don't buy into any of that. I think it was just a bad call, a series of bad calls, quite frankly.
John Wilner with us for a couple of minutes. As always, we talk about what's going on in the college football scene with the great John Wilner, nationally syndicated columnist. You can find his content over on sports360az.com. Of course, you can follow John on social media as well. All right. Are you ready to write off and just say this is the worst decision ever with the CFP, the way that it's gone so far? Because everybody's weighing in with opinions, and I want John Wilner's on the CFP as a whole.
Well, I think that on the whole, it's been good. The bottom line is it was intended to do two things. Create the home field games in the opening round, which added an element that college football has never had, postseason games at home. And I thought that was great. And the other thing it was designed to do was to open up access for the entire country, create a tournament and not a four-team invitational. It made the regular season better. It made more games and more teams relevant. And look, we had three teams from the West that were in this thing. Sure. And if it had been a 14 playoff, Oregon would have gotten in. Boise and Arizona State would not have. So it did its job in terms of making college football's postseason tournament a national event. There are definitely some tweaks that have to be made. Oregon got hosed. You can't have the number one seed in that getting that kind of a draw, right? Where you're playing the number six, because Ohio State was the sixth ranked team. They need to seed the teams based on their rankings. That's the number one deal. I think we'll see that by 2026. I doubt we'll see it next year because it would have to get unanimous approval. And there's no reason for the Big Ten or the Mountain West, I mean, the Big 12 or the Mountain West to vote for something that doesn't help them.
Right.
So 2026, I think, is when we'll get the changes that are needed.
What about the idea that having a first round bye is bad?
Oh, You're preaching to the choir. I've been the choir saying Oregon needed to lose the Big Ten championship game. You don't want that bye. So not only did the teams that had byes all lose in the quarterfinals, they were outscored 42-3 in the first quarter, right? And you could say, well, ASU and Boise were big underdogs. Sure, except that after the first quarter, both Boise and ASU played their opponents pretty much even, right? Boise was down 14-0. ASU was down 14-3, and Oregon was down 14-0. All teams with byes. It's 24 days off. It used to be you could have the 24 days off and play in the Rose Bowl because your opponent also had 24 days off. But with the way the playoffs structured, Oregon's opponent had only 10 days off. They played.
Right.
So it's a huge competitive disadvantage, I think, to be playing have 24 days off and play in a team that's only been off for 10 and had a game. And we saw it. The teams with byes were sluggish and slow in the first quarters, and they all fell behind.
All right, before I get you out of here then, look at these two games this week. Are they decisively easy to predict, or are we looking at 13-10s, 17-14s? Are we looking at 43-41? John, let's go through each game.
Well, I think that one game is easy to predict. I think Ohio State's going to blow Texas's doors off. I've never been a Texas guy this whole season, right? They Wow. missed a lot. They didn't play a great SEC schedule. They lost to Georgia twice. They struggled with ASU. I think Texas is good, not elite. I think Ohio State is the best team in the country when they're on, and they are on. I mean, that was something to behold, what they did to Oregon. Even though Oregon was a little sluggish, I mean, it was just a wipeout. So I think Ohio State will beat Texas by multiple touchdowns. The other game to me is very interesting. I think Penn State and Notre Dame are almost the same team. Good, not great quarterbacks, elite defenses, very good running games. Two teams that have not been able to get over the hump, right? Penn State could never get over the hump in the regular season and get into the playoff. Notre Dame has, when they've been in the playoff, they haven't gotten over the hump and won, right? Every time Notre Dame's in the playoff, they get beat 42-14. I think that this Notre Dame team is better, and that could be like 17-14, 24-21. I think it will be close, low scoring, and kind of an old school Joe Paterno against Lou Holtz type of deal, Ooh. Right? The other game, I mean, I think give Ohio State the title right now as far as I'm concerned. They're the best team.
Wow. Okay, I'm going to throw a curveball at you on this one because I like
it. All right.
All right. So the SEC is rooting for Texas to win. You don't think Texas has a shot. All the nonsense about how the SEC is the greatest ever and they have ESPN behind them, if they don't get a team in the national championship game, and the fact that they're already down to just one left, what does it say about the SEC and what would they like to see happen, not just in this game, but in the offseason to tweak more in their favor, John? Because you know that's what they want.
Well, they do want to tweak, and they're going to get it tweaked. It's going to take 2 years, but in 2026, the SEC is going to have 3 or 4 automatic bids in the playoff every year. Wow. I think that's what's going to happen. Big Ten, same thing. So what does it say about the SEC? I mean, first of all, the biggest problem in the SEC this year is the quarterback play hasn't been great. But over and above that, there has been a lot on social media about, the SEC, if Texas loses, they're not going to have a team in the national championship. They didn't have one in the national championship last year. Last year was basically an all Big Ten championship game, Michigan against Washington. The Huskies were on their way into the Big Ten. Yep. So it's now 2 years, really, that Alabama and Georgia, because those were the dominant teams with, you throw LSU in here, Auburn in there. It really has been all about Alabama and Georgia. And this will be the second year that neither of those teams plays for the national championship. So they both had, quarterback play hurt Alabama this year. Georgia could have beaten Notre Dame if they had Carson Beck, but, they were playing with a backup quarterback in the quarterfinal game. So the SEC is a little bit down. It's still the best conference, but the Big Ten, the top of the Big Ten is very, very good as well.
Yeah. I'll let you go off that. I appreciate your time and insights as always, John. Thanks.
Thanks very much, Brad.
There's John Wilner, and we're back with more after this timeout.